Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Sara Gant. Sara, how are you doing today?
Hi. Well, thanks. Bit hot.
Yeah, I've actually got my door open here on the side, so I apologize to listeners if there's any noise. Also, I'm joined, of course, by the venerable Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
Feeling venerable. Thank you, Nicholas.
So, we are now into the spin zone. It was a weird election, as our episode on Tuesday made clear, I think. And I think no one is entirely sure who won. I think everyone is sure that the ANC lost, and Action SA can probably claim to say that they won. But going forward, we are going to enter a zone of coalition politics the likes of which South Africa, I don't think, has ever seen before. The number of municipalities that do not have a majority is enormous. And it's in very varied parts of the country. So last time, basically, the three big metros required a coalition. That was Joburg, Tshwane, and Nelson Mandela Bay. And then also Motsimole or Morimole. I can't remember what it's called, the Southern Limpopo municipality also required a coalition. But apart from that, there wasn't too much that the ANC needed to do. There was, I think, like Ekurhuleni, by getting the AIC on board, the ANC managed to keep control there. But the situation has changed, and that's become, I think, the most interesting thing of how politics is shaping up. And this has, I think, got to change our view as South Africans about how our politics works. We're going to have to start thinking probably a little bit more like how the Dutch and the Germans look at their elections, which is coalitions everywhere. So with the exception of the DA-dominated Midvaal, every single municipality in Gauteng is going to require a coalition to keep themselves in power. The most obvious one for that is the EFF, but we'll see if the votes are being ironed out there. Joburg is a complete mess. you can see Action SA, the DA, I don't think have enough if they join together to actually form a coalition, so they would need to bring on someone else. So that's a mess, and I'm not sure whether the DA is going to go for that. Tshwane, a little bit of a similar story. You might see an Action SA DA Freedom Front Plus coalition there. I'm not sure if they'll have quite enough seats, but there's a possibility of that, which would be quite, I think, interesting and might actually work. KZN, coalitions everywhere. Richards Bay could see an IFP-DA coalition. Ekurhuleni, the ANC is going to need to form a coalition with the EFF if they want to maintain control. It's a mess all over, and I suspect that at least for the first couple of years, it's going to be very difficult for parties to get along. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have to rehold some local government elections. So we talked about this, Gabriel Krause and I, on Tsihle's show last night, Big Daddy Liberty's show. But if a municipality basically can't do some of its basic functions like passing a budget or hiring a municipal manager, the province can place it under administration and rehold local government elections to try and get a more stable coalition. I would not be surprised if that happens. Anyway, enough waffling from me. Sara, firstly, your take on the election generally, because we haven't heard from you yet on this. And secondly, what do you make of all this coalition shenanigans? Who do you think is going to team up with who?
Yeah, well, I think the significant take out of this is the ANC losing significantly across the board, going below 50% in a huge number of municipalities. I think there was some anticipation that there would be, some said to be 51, 50, 49, but I think the fact that some of the losses, I mean, I can't remember which constituency it is, sorry, I get blank on these, but in the one they'd gone from something like 60 seats to 31. I mean, literally whatever the reason for it, whether it be a stay away vote or people voting for other parties, that sort of result is absolutely shattering. I mean, it dwarfs anything that anyone else may or may not have gotten in the same municipality. And I think that's really the takeout. I think the fact that it does signify perhaps that the beginning of the end of that period where sort of the Freedom Party, the movement that brought you freedom, it's about the 30-year mark that they usually disillusion really sets in. And I suppose it takes that long for everything to run aground anyway. But I think that's what we're seeing now. So all bets are off. There's no guarantees for 2024, in my view, even though generally the ANC does better in national elections. But it is a significant sea change, and theoretically it offers some hope, but that depends to a large extent on how the coalitions behave. And the problem with coalitions is that is maturity. A combination of those who experienced parties and those independents and small parties who may have very good, you know, they come from a good place as to what they want to do, but how they need to do it and what needs to be done and how they need to interact with anyone who invites them into coalition is we're in kindergarten in that respect.
Indeed. So Terence, I want your take on the coalitions issue. But I was thinking a little bit, and maybe I'm being too kind to the DA here, but I was thinking how, if you're the DA, right, at the sort of headline result, this election doesn't look great. You know, you've gone back, I think, 5 percentage points across the whole country. You lost seats pretty much everywhere. In a lot of places, the DA kind of maintained sort of roughly where it was. It didn't grow. But in some places, it went backwards by a little bit. So they're not going to be happy about that. But if we're entering an era where coalition politics is going to be the big deal, and you are the big opposition party, which is the case in most places, and even if you're not the biggest, you're definitely a kingmaker in many municipalities, I think the DA actually has quite a strong hand to play in a lot of these sort of coalition governments, or possibly in blocking really terrible legislation from going through in some cases, especially when the ANC and EFF together do not have a majority. Terence, what do you make of that theory, and what do you make of the coalition issue in general?
Well, I think that first of all, one of the things to bear in mind, just on the rise and decline, is that if you look at the actual numbers involved, the people who, you know, proportions are one thing, but yeah, there's some serious introspection in order. You know, even for parties that did relatively well, that, you know, the pool out of which that was drawn this time was significantly down. But put that aside. The DA has been talking this coalition talk in various degrees of intensity since the 1990s. Worked okay in Cape Town. It didn't work so well in Johannesburg, and jury, I think, will be out for a while on Tshwane. But you know, I think the big lesson there is that this is difficult stuff. You know, I want to almost channel my inner Jordan Peterson. This is difficult stuff, guys. You've got you know, the for a political party in the Netherlands or Germany to say, well, you know, are they going into government or not? I think it's the calculus there is that inherently is going to give you more power, and you're presiding over a functional state with partners who all accept, at the very least, that to govern is a function of government. I don't think we're entirely there in South Africa. Getting into government means taking over a lot of problems, and you could be getting into bed with people who have, you know, at best, a very passing interest in whether the space is actually governed or not, or whether this is simply an access, simply about, as we like to put it, access to resources. There was something I read on the News 24 platform, I think it was, saying that one shouldn't discount inherently the prospect of the DA and the ANC in certain instances doing a deal. The DA could theoretically go in and like make demands for a number of portfolios. They want procurement, they want finance, whatever. But you know, I think you are taking over. That would be something of a Faustian bargain. You're dealing with trade unions that are unambiguously committed to the continuation of the ANC's power, and particularly in the I think even the smaller municipalities, you know, this isn't like turning around a rubber duck in a bathtub. This is an oil tanker that's hole below the waterline, spewing its filth all over the marine environment, and probably on fire as well. Maybe the smart money is doing what the EFF by and large did, which was to stay out of it. But then again, I do think that there's a big political factor that if you have a chance to get in and supposedly to make things better or do things, it's a very difficult thing to go back to your constituency and explain why you chose not to do that. I mean, I think that applies across the board. The EFF's been going, talking about, we had an EFF mayor in Johannesburg because we controlled things. But, well, you know, there's now opportunities for them, more because of the decline of the ANC's vote than an expansion of their own. You know, well, there's a Kurileni. Are you going in? Are you going to actually, stretch your stuff?
I must say, this talk of people saying there's good authority that the DA is going to get into bed with the ANC, I don't know where that's coming from, because, I mean, you know, as far as I understand it, you know, I know a lot of people in the DA, John Steenhuisen and Helen Ziller, know that would be absolute suicide for the party in almost every case. Maybe in some small municipality somewhere they might do that, like maybe, I don't know, the rural Northern Cape or something, they might do that.
I think there is a very small where they have done it.
Yeah.
The fact that I can't remember the name probably says something about its
right. So I have a feeling that might be fake news from the mainstream media, so to speak. Sarah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the Johannesburg is a very good. It's a very good example of I think it would be almost impossible for the DA to go into coalition with the ANC, because the ANC has so single-handedly taken the biggest city the biggest city on the continent, and let everything go to rot. And the problem is the issues are so big and there's so much to do that as the second party in the coalition, the DA just runs the risk of being lumped with the ANC's mistakes or failure to improve things. So I think right. That's a huge problem. I suspect coalitions are probably likely to be more successful, as I think they are, in rural areas and smaller towns where people actually kind of either know each other or, you know, they're really on the ground much closer to
the people. Right, the councils are quite small. You know, you might have 20 councillors doing the deciding rather than 200.
That's exactly the point. I think Modimoli's worked. You know, even the EFF has been a good partner in that. So the strange things can happen. You'll have a mixed bag in every respect, but the metros are the big problem. I mean, the past history has not been a good one. The grandstanding, the swapping support bases, the flip-flopping, it's been as immature and revolting as it can possibly get. We don't have Israel's experience in multi-party coalition governments.
Oh yeah, no, they're the experts at that. They have endless coalition politics. I can't find the comment now, but someone said that they fear that ANC EFF coalitions together would completely destroy the infrastructure in a lot of places. And, I think there's definitely something to be said for that. But I must say, you know, from what I know about a city like Joburg, I think it's very unlikely that anyone can turn that around in 5 years. And if I was the opposition, either the DA or Action SA, I would stay away from Joburg, because I think that there will be a major infrastructure meltdown, particularly of electricity, in the next sort of 5 years. And there will probably be very little you can do about it. And so just stay away because you're going to take the blame for that, I think, if you're going to coach. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, possibly. Well,
I think that's probably correct. I think the only way we'll start avoiding that is if an ANC EFF coalition actually takes the whole thing seriously. But you know,
yeah, I have a feeling their policy will be more land invasions, less property rights, more big contracts for comrades before the gravy runs out. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too cynical.
In order to turn that around, you've got to go from an ethic of consumption to one of investment. Mm. That often means delaying or putting off the what I think are, you know, quite reasonable demands from people who have very little. So it's a very, very hazardous political goal game to play. But you know, and I think that's why they say that changes come on the cusp of crisis. You know, things can get very, very bad before someone is put in with a mandate to actually do something. You see this, you saw this across the across Africa in the 90s and across Latin America in the 70s and 80s, you know, with varying degrees of success. I don't know. Frederick Van Zyl Slabbert once said something about the solution's all pretty obvious. The danger is running out of time before you get there. Words to that effect.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So let us move on, I think, a little bit, because we've been talking elections to death for the last 3 days. Let's talk a little bit about a character who once was a big deal and perhaps is not so much anymore. And that is, of course, former leader of the DA, Mr. Musi Maimane. And to say that there are sour grapes here is an understatement of enormous proportions. So Musi started this project called the One SA Movement, which wasn't entirely clear what it was to me. And maybe I just didn't look into it enough because I didn't. But it seemed like it was a kind of rough brand association between independent candidates across the country. And now Musi is claiming that, you know, the independents who won, that was all because of One Movement SA, and it shows how successful he's been. And this is a great day for his movement. And now Musi is going to, he told Eusebius McKaiser this morning, run for president in 2024. Yeah. Terrence, what do you make of that?
Okay. It's intriguing intellectually for me. I think in some defense of his One SA movement, it's not just about backing independent candidates. It's about civic activism, and I think that there's a great deal to be to be said about that. But yes, you know, not every he takes the aggregate vote of all independents and says, well, that sort of shows our pool or whatever. I think he is being, as I think Mangosuthu Buthelezi once said, economic with the truth. They can certainly take some credit, I think, for some of those wins in those towns in the Western Cape. But then again, you know, to what extent, you know, were they driving that, or were they piggybacking on an initiative that already existed? I've said this before on the show, that there's a funny thing in South Africa's political culture. The idea that you want a non-political alternative to your politics, I think in some way that lets you kind of slide out from the difficult position of having to be oppositional to the ANC, you know, to which we must all, you know, genuflect, you know, in gratitude as the kind of natural birthing mother of the country. I think that old attitude is a bit of a problem, but you know, so we had all these splinter parties that, using the word independent. I think one SA is very much in that. You know, they at least have thrown off the hackneyed idea of using independent in their name. But I think to the extent that they have detected that they've ridden the wave or identified a frustration with party politics, they're onto something. Now the now where it becomes intriguing for me is, okay, he's going to stand for president. You need some sort of party machinery, even if it's, in order to do that. I mean, they fought hard for, for independent candidates, but the ANC's solution to that seems to be, okay, we'll treat every province as a constituency. So in other words, we don't really change anything. You can just put an individual's name onto that. Still, there's a question of money, and you would, because we are elected, we elect our people, or elect our presidents through indirectly. Somehow, you're going to have a system to put, 200 people to 201 people or whatever into the National Assembly. It essentially, you're talking about a party. I don't, even if you want to try and once again spin it like saying, yeah, this is the Coalition of Independence, CAL, maybe coalition of Musi's independent friends or what, I don't know. You're not getting this one man band, independent free thinker, Ross Perot type. It's just not organizationally possible. I mean, as I say, from a sort of intellectual perspective, it's intriguing. Of course, I think that Musi is a charismatic person, and if he managed to, he'll probably get support with his movement to get a few people in. You ask what one essay is. I think the closest thing is what Mompele Ramphele had before she decided that she actually was going to rescue the country. She didn't have a party, she had a platform. Then she discovered that she only got two seats and she wasn't interested anymore. There's this messiah complex. I don't think Musi is quite, I don't think his ego is quite that big, but I remember Mompele Ramphele and Louis Leite, both. Their whole spiel was, we are what the country's been missing. Don't worry, we're here now.
I don't
I think
know.
that
I have a
each of them got like two
feeling that,
seats.
yeah, I have a feeling that Moose's ego might be of a similar size. He just perhaps is more skilled in disguising that fact. But anyway, Sarah, your thoughts on President Maimane?
Not my money. Well, I think the bottom line is the whatever happens in the national election, you're not going to have the range of independence that you have for municipal election, even though by law we're now allowed to have independents run for national, because national is so much about policy at a greater level that I don't see the role of independence being the same. It's not on the ground stuff. I think he's going to need a political party. I don't think he's going to get one. I think I can only assume, but I don't know. I'm speculating that he didn't join Herman Mashaba because it wasn't big enough for the both of them. I think you're right about the.
I think that's exactly what happened.
I think, and you see, once that happened, what the hell was Musi going to do? Herman had got got ahead of him on that, and I think Musi's charismatic. I'm not sure he's terribly. I think he's a little bit, as I say, economical with the truth. But I also think he's not the strategist that Herman is. Although we still have to see how Action SA will actually work in practice. I almost think, for him to come, he should have got into position with these elections. For him to come up from behind and expect to become, unless he joins the ANC,
Yeah, maybe that's his play. He's going to join the ANC and rescue them from themselves.
And then he's the young, charismatic, uncorrupted. It would
Well, if that's
cheese off
his.
a lot of ANC people, I imagine, but that's the only way I could see it.
Yeah, I think he would last about 5 minutes in the ANC before. He got eaten alive, so I wouldn't recommend that. All right, let
Just
us.
if I can make one final point, getting an independent into parliament, even when you have a system that is more conducive to it, is hard. I'm old. Once again, I'm old enough to remember in 1987, the in the election to the old white parliament, where you had a constituency system with each constituency being small enough that it was possible to be known in a community and to be elected. Okay, you know, this is just from the confines of white politics, but it happened from time to time. I remember in 1987, there was a lot of hype about three independence candidates. There was one in Stellenbosch, Professor Lattigan, I think her name was, Dennis Worrell, who was standing against Chris Hiernes somewhere in the Cape, and Wynand Malan and Randburg. And they captured the imagination of a lot of people who couldn't quite bring themselves to vote for the progs, because the progs were kind of soft on, you know, security and whatever. They didn't like the Nats. Anyway, end result, Esther Lattigan was then wiped out. Dennis Worrell came within 84 votes, if I remember correctly, of Chris Hiernes. And Wynand Malan, who had a very, very long career in the National Party beforehand, and therefore was quite well known, won his seat. But that just gives you an indication. Now you're talking about, you know, having independent candidates standing in this constituency called the Free State or the Northwest or whatever. Yeah, it's it logistically, I don't see it working.
Yeah,
I think that's about the shape of it. Right, so we don't have a huge amount of time to talk about our last topic today, but let's dive into it at least a little bit, and that is, of course, the thing that most of the world is focused on at the moment, and that is the big climate change conference in Glasgow in Scotland called COP26. And the important thing for us is that apparently South Africa is looking at a deal where the wealthy countries, places like Germany, UK, United States, those places, will give us, I think it's $8.5 billion in order to transition away from coal power. Terence, you had some concerns.
Well, yeah, look, actually, I'm very much in favor of renewable energy. I think we need a greater mix, and I do think that the environmental factors are important. Whether it can supply the kind of the volume and reliability of power that we need at the moment is another matter, and I don't particularly want to get into that. But what strikes me is this: what does Cartwheels for, what do you say, $130 billion? Medupi, okay, this is from that great open to all comers source Wikipedia, so you know, take this from whence it comes. In 2013 rands, Medupi was estimated at $154 billion. That was the projected cost. By 2019, it was $234 billion. Now, this is, you know, the cost of generating a relatively small percentage of our power needs. That subsidy or those promises, and we don't quite know how they're going to be broken down, whether it's a concession or whether it's grants or whatever. Well, it's we don't even get one power station. So yes, you know, I think a lot of this has to do with particularly American geopolitics in offering an alternative to the Chinese model, which is coming and we build, you know, traditional infrastructure. I don't think that it's entirely without merit. But this is not going to solve our problems. It's not a massive freebie. And you know, once it gets past the grasping and greedy hands of those who will see this money coming and start licking their lips, yeah. Well, we saw what happened with Medupi, didn't we?
I have a feeling like the great empty space that is Eskom's debt will suddenly just get all of this money, and that and it will be gone. We won't even know that we had it in about 2 years. Sarah, what do you think of this?
You see, I think they have a problem because we are a very significant polluter, and you know, we give off our power stations expel a lot of CO2. I think we're 12th in the world, so. We are significant up and up there, and we have power stations that are creaking badly. I mean, we know every time we have load shedding that we're talking about the two new overly expensive power stations that are not fully on stream, and then something keeps blowing or popping or whatever it is, and then the old power stations which are being pushed way beyond their lifespan, and the infrastructure was insufficiently well maintained, and now they have to keep on literally maintaining from blowout to blowout constantly and uninterruptedly. Look, whatever we do with renewables, it's got to, if it goes to Eskom, it's got to go to an Eskom that has, you know, is not interfered with by government, which, as Terence said, is pretty unlikely. But it's not going to solve all our problems if we're going to grow the economy at all.
Right. Even if we can get our renewables to work, the simple fact of the matter is they're really expensive per kilowatt of electricity produced. Yeah. So, yeah, try selling that to the population that's desperate for some electricity. And well, I don't think it's going to go down well.
I think it's also, you know, I think the developed world is looking at giving support to the developing world, realizing that growth is what the developing world needs to become less carbon intensive. But I think there's a little bit of soft bigotry of low expectations here that, you know, there isn't really a proper assessment. They're tending to look at Africa and Asia and as if these places are countries. And I think there's basically whatever merit there is to the climate scenario, and I'm sort of in two minds about the extent of it. The reality is it just isn't going to be feasible to bring things within temperatures within the right amount within the sort of time frames that they put it, net zero emissions. I mean, if the UK produces net zero emissions, it makes, you know, it affects 1% of the world's emissions. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, about
China and India are the big players here.
And it's also not tending to look at a whole lot of other things that go to affecting the ability for developing countries to grow and doing things that would improve the environments in which people live that may make a difference. So am I skeptical? Yeah.
I see that that you remarked about Greta Thunberg being outside the COP26 conference having a good time. I think more people should have a good time, frankly. So, you know, if this is fulfilling for her,
I will
Socky Hall Street on a Saturday night. Nothing better.
Yeah, I will. I will say that we are now out of time for the show. So thank you very much for watching. We hope that you have a good time on this weekend and that everyone gets a good opportunity to relax. Anyway, it's close to the end of the year. We'll see you next week for the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.